Blue Wire.
New England sending QB Jimmy Garoppolo to 49ers.
We believe we found the right guy.
Garoppolo, quick pass, caught by Kittle. He dives, and he's in. Touchdown, 49ers. Kittle is gonna go. Touchdown.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Striking Gold, your 49ers podcast on the Blue Wire Network. This week's episode is sponsored by BetOnline.ag. My name is Rob Lauder. I cover the 49ers for NinersNation.com. And joining me tonight is my co-host, former NFL defensive back, Eric Crocker. How's it going, man?
You know, it's going cool. Going good. You know, obviously, we just talked about a little bit off air, but, just making this transition to the Southern life is different. It's different here, man. Like,
what did you
I look
say?
Around.
Last time we recorded, like, what did you say? You're like, howdy.
Oh, yeah, howdy. Yeah, and they really talk like that. I wish I can go around with a handheld like recorder thing and just so people can hear, like, you know, how country these people are.
Could. I guess you could just press record on your iPhone and walk around. I mean, just keep it in your pocket. Don't let people see you doing that.
Right.
It'd be a little weird.
Yeah, it's funny just listening to them and the different way that they say things. And, you know, obviously I was here for a couple years when I went to college in 2010, 2011. But to be an adult here and be back and just really be more involved in stuff off of campus is just, yeah, it's just a little different.
Yeah, and for those of you that might not have listened to the last time Crocker and I were on here, and he kind of gave his update on what's going on, but he moved from here in California, Stockton, all the way to Arkansas, right?
Yes, sir.
And what city?
Monticello.
Oh, okay. And you are going to school so that you can get what again?
Finish getting my bachelor's degree and teacher credentials.
There we go, man. A fellow teacher. So as long as the Striking Gold endures, as I expect it would, this podcast will be brought to you eventually by two teachers rather than just one.
Right.
Which is a very, which might be a good segue into what we're going to talk about, is I feel like teaching is a tremendous job if you really want to, like, have the opportunity. There's plenty of teachers that don't seize the opportunity, but if you really want to have the opportunity to, like, impact people and affect their life and change them or be changed and, you know, all that stuff, I feel like, especially you, I feel like you'll make a good teacher and you'll realize pretty quickly. And you're a coach, so you already kind of get that idea, but you realize really quickly how much you can affect people if you want to. Right. You know, it's a great job.
Yeah, I always wanted to be a teacher, maybe for different reasons. Growing up, I just remember having this PE teacher that was just like just a big dude. And he would just tell me like to run laps and do this and do that. And I'm like, how is this dude telling me to run these laps and make this time? This dude probably can't even walk upstairs without breathing hard. Like, you know, and I was like, you know what? At the end of the day, I don't know what I'm going to do in life. But if all else fails, I'm going to be a PE teacher. And I made it up in my mind from that point on that if I ever go to college, it would be to be a teacher. And that's what I ended up doing. I went to college to be a teacher. Obviously, I left early to play professional football. Now, once I stopped playing football, I didn't immediately go back to college. I worked in the school district. There was several different things I did. But one thing that I did, I was like they call it para, it's a like a behavioral aid like specialist or whatever, to where like I'm working with a kid and, you know, he has different behavioral issues. One thing that, and it kind of changed my outlook on even being a teacher, but the way I kind of grew up, you only know what you know. And really, I didn't really know shit. Like I didn't have anybody to tell me, you know, Hey, Eric, you know, you're pretty talented. You know, you can go off to college and play college football and get your education paid for it. Not one person ever told me that. And you would think like that that's something that like along the line, somebody would have said that, but nobody ever did. My family, you know, my mom didn't go to college. My dad didn't go to college. I don't even think they graduated high school. So, you know, it goes back to you only know what you know. Like I had terrible study habits. You know, my mom never checked on me. Hey, how's your grades? How's your, you know, are you studying? Did you do your homework? You know, hey, let me check in with your teachers. Like nothing, none of that. So the way I grew up and not really knowing that there's much outside of whatever my circumstances were at that time, a lot of kids are growing up that same way and maybe even worse off, right? Where, you know, they're growing up in families where, you know, they're not being exposed to, you know, positive individuals. I was lucky to have at least my uncle who, you know, he went off and he had played college football. And I had my brother who was a good football player. He struggled academically as well, like I did, but he was really good, all-state cornerback. So I had a couple positive influences to kind of guide me in a better direction than what I could have went down, which I grew up in the neighborhood with all Crips. So, like, those are my friends, my buddies, like, my homies. You know, I grew up with these dudes. And there are a lot of kids that grow up around those same type of people as I did, but then they don't have positive influences. And I noticed the type of effect that it had on these kids and their behaviors in school. And that was something that really jumped out to me and made it even a little bit more urgent that, you know, I think I can make some type of impact. Now, I always felt like the way that I can impact the youth was through sports. You know, football is what I do. You know, obviously I talk about it, I coach it, I did it. I felt like maybe if I told kids my story and my hardships and the things I had to go through, maybe that would help some of them. But I think, you know, taking it to the next level is actually being in the classroom with them, like having to, you know, get on them about their grades and, you know, maybe, you know, doing something to help hopefully take them on field trips and different things like that to where I'm impacting their lives even more outside of just being their coach. And really kind of guiding them in the right direction, you know, academically. And so, you know, I really felt like I'm still going to be a PE teacher, but I really felt like that could, you know, furthermore help me with a lot of the youth, and especially where I'm from in Stockton, California, which a lot of people I'm pretty sure that listen to this podcast, they're familiar with Stockton, and, you know, it has its good things and there's probably not that many, and it has a ton of bad, and it has a really negative stigma, but, you know, we're really proud people from Stockton. We just need, you know, to do a little bit more for these kids. And, you know, it's getting worse and worse.
Yeah, it's something else. Like one of the first things I came to realize when all the quarantine kicked in and obviously my job as a teacher became a lot different and I was sent home and all of a sudden there was this huge void in my life. And the fact that I have, you know, 100 and something students that I see on a daily basis almost, and all of a sudden they were just gone and I didn't get to see them. And it was weird because during parts of the day, you think like, dude, these kids are a pain in the ass. And sometimes they are, but those are just kids in general. And then you're home for, you know, what was a week and then 2 weeks and it became 2 months. And obviously the school year has been canceled at this point, but then you realize you just really miss them and you enjoyed being around them. And like, you know, you miss just the constant interaction and how every day is different. And what one of the things I realized too is yes, a lot of students would tell me how much I changed them and affected them. But they also changed me and gave me new outlooks on things and, you know, made me laugh all the time and stuff like that. So the idea of being a teacher and a coach is it's fun because you're a mentor and, you know, no day is the same. And it's just, it's cool to know that if you want it, the opportunity to change lives for the better, you have it. And, you know, like, everybody knows with what's going on right now, and you know, there is no shortage of people in the world that can have a positive impact on somebody else. If you are in a position to have a positive impact on somebody else and take a little bit of yourself and, you know, be an influence and teach people what is right and wrong. And then you end up realizing that a lot of these kids, like you're saying, don't have anybody in their life. One, like, I've even heard of kids that other teachers have told me that nobody's ever given them a compliment before. Like I've had kids where they basically said, well, no one really ever says nice things to me. So it's nice to hear like somebody appreciates something I've done, you know, when I compliment them on their artwork or something. So, you know, it's just important to try to put yourself in a position where you never know what you can be to somebody else. And that kind of brings us into our, you know, what we're going to talk about today. And if you are, I'm not going to say there's no 49ers content to it, but obviously with what's going on right now, with the deaths of George Floyd, and before that it was Ahmaud Arbery, and now you've got the protests, and you've got some things, you know, obviously have escalated. It just, me and Crocker have already talked about it. We already text back and forth. We are, you know, obviously it just doesn't seem like it's not appropriate to just gloss over it and talk 49ers ball like it's business as usual, because it isn't. So if you're listening right now and you're rolling your eyes because you know where I'm going and when I'm telling you that what we're going to be talking about, then you don't have to listen. And, you know, obviously if you've listened to this podcast before, you know, I say thank you and I say I appreciate you after every episode, and I still don't feel any different. But if you're just in a position where you don't feel like hearing about this anymore, then, you know, just press pause or stop or whatever it is and just close out of it, because that's what we're going to talk about. And one of the things I've told Crocker is I'm interested to hear his perspective, because I'm white, he's black. His view of this situation versus mine is going to be completely different, complete 180s. That doesn't mean that we won't necessarily agree with one another, but it's just a view of the situation. So before we go any further into this, and like I said, there is some relation to it when it comes to 49ers, and we'll touch on that. But before we go any further, what are your general thoughts right now, Croc? What are some of the things you've thought about over the past few days? And I mean, like I said, it doesn't have to have any sort of a slant towards the 49ers. Just, you know, tell me what you think and what's on your mind, man.
I just think it's unfortunate. I think it's unfortunate that, you know, we're still going through these type of things and dealing with these, you know, type of situations. And, you know, I'm aware that it's not, you know, one person or one thing, or it's not everybody, right? But is there just things in place, or, you know, people in place at positions to where they shouldn't be. I mean, that's a small percentage of it, but, you know, just for somebody to do what that guy did to kill George Floyd and murder him, it's tough. And it was a tough thing to kind of see. And usually I turn my camera off or my phone off, and I don't look at things like that. I just happened to watch that, and it was just sad, you know, and for people to stand around and watch, and, you know, for the people that were recording, you know, it's like, you know, to feel helpless that they can't help. The only way that they can help is to get it documented on camera. But they, you know, they were screaming, they were yelling to get off of them, and, you know, the guy just wouldn't. And there are people that have, you know, different things, different type of hates in their heart. It's not everybody, but, you know, hopefully the more that it's kind of brought to the light, the more we can, you know, figure out a way for everybody to come together on it. It's just tough. I don't even know what to say. That I'm pretty sure people haven't seen or heard before, but, you know, it's just tough. It's just tough situation, man, for everybody.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously it was definitely a match that lit a renewed fire, I guess you could say, because like I said earlier, you know, Ahmaud Arbery was killed not too long before that by, you know, citizens in the street. And that also was caught on camera. And that goes back to what Crocker just said, is like these cell phones and these cameras have just turned into a weapon of truth, essentially. Because, you know, what you see on video, at least in that moment, there's always context and what happened before and what happened after. But at least in that moment, you can see exactly what is happening, and it can't be twisted. It can't be turned, you know, obviously, especially as cameras get better, because everything becomes clearer. And that's, you know, almost like a metaphor for the way things have gone. And from my perspective, the only thing I can do is just try to look at everything with a brush of of right and wrong. And, you know, I feel like in my heart, I know that I was raised right. And I know that my parents, despite the fact that I was, you know, raised by obviously two white parents in a very stable, I had a very stable childhood. Both my parents were teachers. And I posted this on Twitter. I have had very little trauma in my life. So the first thing I wanted to do when all this happened was I just wanted to ask people of color, African-Americans, Mexicans, Asians, whoever would relate to this question, what can a guy like me do to help you? Because there's just no chance that I'm going to relate to it at all.
You know what? I think the best thing that you and not just you, like me, like anyone, is just hold people accountable. You know, I think there are a lot of times where we sit in on these conversations. I've had these type of conversations with people when, you know, Kaepernick was going through his whole thing, and, you know, people would, you know, ask me, I don't know if they were asking me to maybe try to get a rise out of me, but, you know, I'm working in the school district, and it would be like a person on campus, like that's coming to do some, you know, some type of construction or whatever. And I remember the guy asking me, like, you know, what do you think about the whole Kaepernick thing? And, you know, I would always like to kind of feel out how the other person feels. So I would say, like, you know, he has his reasons for doing it. And the guy would just flat out, you know, well, I think he's an idiot. And I think we should take those kind of times to hold people accountable and ask questions and just have that conversation, because, you know, maybe you have a conversation that can change that person's views on everything and why Kaepernick did what he did. And then maybe by changing his views, you know, he talks to somebody else and it's like, you know what? Hey, this Kaepernick situation, I understand it a little bit more now. I just had a conversation with somebody today. So I think we need to continue to have conversations. And if we have enough, maybe that'll change the way a lot of people perceive this. Because, you know, I mean, there are a lot of people around America that were upset with Colin Kaepernick. And I just think that just from that's just their mindset on how they viewed it. And maybe a conversation could have helped, you know? So that, I think, you know, so even with you, it's hold people accountable and have that conversation with them when you hear that, because we all have those conversations with that person that is disgusted, or, you know, you kind of hear the hate in their voice towards that specific person, you know, whether it's Kaepernick or whoever. Have a conversation with them. And instead of just kind of brushing it off, because that's something I would do. I'm a non-confrontational type person. So a lot of times before, I would just brush things off and just like, oh, okay, that's your opinion. Instead of taking that opportunity to have a conversation with that person.
I'm the same way, dude. I mean, I feel like I could be confrontational if I need to be. And I know you're probably the same way. Like if I truly feel like it's something that it needs to be a confrontation, and that could be any number of scenarios, but I'm kind of the same way. Like I and being in the 49ers spectrum of life, I had those conversations and those comments a lot, you know, like, hey man, you write for 49ers website. What do you think about Colin Kaepernick, man? You believe this crap, you know, stuff like that. And then, you know, you very, very quickly get, you know, what the other person's opinion is, you know, right, just by the way they ask the question. And, you know, I was always honest, but at the same time, I definitely did it in a way where I just wasn't going to start some, you know, some argument or, you know, some, any type of heated conversation, because like I said, you usually know where people stand just by the way they ask a question. Or maybe they can't even ask the question without inserting their opinion into it. So it's hard to go about that, especially if it's like at work or someplace where you want to maintain the peace and have good relationships. It's hard to go about those situations and not be non-confrontational, because you just don't want to get into it. But, you know, when it comes to something like what's going on right now, I feel like it's even more important to have that conversation and to kind of, you know, put your foot in the ground a little bit and maybe feel uncomfortable for a little while you have to talk to somebody about something that it's not comfortable. And that's just racism in general it should be uncomfortable. If you're a decent human being, then talking about racism is going to be uncomfortable, because you're either talking with somebody who you feel is probably a little bit racist in some way or another, Or maybe there's some type of alarm going off inside of you that maybe you realize wasn't there type of deal. And the more I think kind of the, what happens is the more we talk about it, the more we'll be able to kind of, and that's one of the things Jed York said in his statement, not his statement, his interview with, I believe it was Jim Trotter. Yes, he said, look, like if we're going to start tackling this stuff, we just have to talk about it. You have to identify what it is. And you have to talk about it and go about seeing how you can squash it out. And obviously the thing is racism. And what was interesting is another thing you mentioned, and you've already brought up Colin Kaepernick, is when Colin Kaepernick took a knee during the national anthem in protest of police brutality, the police brutality was not the subject of really any of the conversation.
Right.
You know, it kept getting brought up, like people would continually try to say, this is why he's doing this. This is why he's doing this. This is why he's doing this. But the focus was the fact that he was doing that, you know, and no one really wanted to. And look, I am former military. I would be, and I am perfectly comfortable in admitting that the first time he did that, I was a little taken back. Like in the military, you have to instill yourself with a sense of pride. Otherwise, you're not going to be motivated enough to load a gun and go kill people or be killed on your country's behalf. You have to kind of instill some of that pride and self-defense within you. So the first time I saw that, I was like, whoa, man, like, is this really the way to go about it? And then even within myself, I was able to like, no one even had to tell me. No one even had to convince me. I was within myself. I was able to say, look, sometimes you have to do something uncomfortable to get people talking. And if I'm not willing to allow people freedom of to express themselves or to, you know, to peacefully protest something, what kind of soldier or, you know, what kind of soldier am I if I'm unwilling to embrace the freedoms that I've signed up to protect? And it really didn't take me very long to kind of correct myself in that situation. Because I, you know, my first reaction was, whoa, what the hell? And then I was like, my intelligence was able to override my emotion. And then I, you know, obviously from there on out, it's been completely understandable. So it's just, that's the bigger thing is there's so much emotion involved in all this. And sometimes that gets the better of people's intelligence, you know, your mammalian brain that's able to, you know, your the human part of your brain that's able to think through situations like this rationally. And it's sometimes the rational part of things doesn't really work out. So kind of what I just mentioned is the 49ers, they decided to pledge yet another $1 million in support of just organizations that are working to create, are working to fix, you know, the social inequalities that are written into the fabric of the country, or at the very least, they manifest themselves all the time. So, you know, obviously that was a step in the right direction. And after the 49ers did that, Jed York interviewed with Jim Trotter, and it was who is in himself African-American. And it was just interesting to hear Jed talk because obviously given throughout the Harbaugh years and Jim Tom Sula and Chip Kelly, and so many different head coaches and realizing Balky was the problem, all this stuff, Jed York got like a really bad rap. And then I feel like since then he's obviously it is a little bit of damage control, but he slowly rebuilt his image. And that goes all the way back to when Colin Kaepernick was taking a knee during the national anthem. Jed York was very vocal about supporting him. And one of the things I tweeted today, and I haven't bothered looking at the replies because people, like I said, are very emotional about this. You know, the 49ers today tweeted Black Lives Matter, hashtag Blackout Tuesday with the black square that's been going around. They even changed their logo to like it's black and gray. And I noticed that a lot of people were getting, and Crocker's going to give me his thoughts on this shortly, but I noticed a lot of people were like dragging the team through the mud because like, hey, this is the same team that cut Colin Kaepernick and contributed to his blackballing. Like, how are they going to be the ones to say Black Lives Matter and speak out on what the current issues when they have their own, you know, skeletons in the closet? And I quote tweeted that and I said, look, I see that this post is taking some heat, but the 49ers have donated millions to support this cause, and a million of that was donated while Colin Kaepernick was still on the team, while he was taking a knee during the national anthem. And Jed York was one. I can only tweet so many characters, Jed York was one of the more vocal people in support of him. And what I basically said was, you know, the fact that everything that's happened to Colin Kaepernick since shouldn't necessarily, part of it, yes, absolutely. And I don't know what goes on behind closed doors, but everything that's happened to Colin Kaepernick since then shouldn't be just laid at the feet of the 49ers to the point where they can't even support current issues because of what happened to Colin Kaepernick. Now, obviously, it's an extremely complicated situation, and there's going to be a lot I don't know behind that happened that I will never know. But to me, it just seems like, I don't know. What do you think, Croc? Am I way off? What's your perspective on this?
Nah, I thought the same way. I was kind of taken back, and I wanted to, like, just go in and respond to everybody. Like, you know, this is the team that openly supported him. You know, now I know later down the line, John Lynch made some comments. But prior to that, you know, Jed York, he was open about it. He spoke about it. He put his money where his mouth is. Like, hey, okay, this is how we do it. I remember even after the fact, the league was voting on something. I can't remember exactly what it was. And he reached out to his players and said, hey, how do you guys feel about this? And he elected not to participate in that vote, that's what his players wanted. I think Richard Sherman was one of the guys that he spoke with. But this is a guy who has been, like, open and at the forefront of not just this, but other things as well. You know, the 49ers, the whole LBG thing, you know, they changed their I'm pretty sure I butchered the letters, but you guys know what I'm talking about.
I think it's LGBTQ, and sometimes there's stuff after that. Like, you know, I don't know. I'm not being facetious. But I know those are the letters, and then I'm not sure what else is added onto that.
Yeah, so they supported that. You know, they changed their logo to, like, rainbow. They have a female on staff that supports that and lives that lifestyle, and she's actually a receiver coach for the 49ers. Like, they're out in front of a lot of things and supporting it, and they did the same thing with the Kaepernick situation. He just wasn't a guy that the new regime wanted to keep. And if we're being all the way real, if it weren't for some injuries the year before, he probably would have been gone then as well. If he didn't have those injuries that made it to where he had to get surgery, and he, after April, whatever, his money was guaranteed. If it weren't for that, he would have been gone a year before. So I don't think the releasing of him has anything to do with the fact that he was kneeling or anything like that. He actually had an opportunity to play later in the year. So, you know, obviously that whole team, that specific team, they supported what he was doing. The team voted him, like, team player of the year or whatever. He got a prestigious award that's given to like your best teammate or something like that. Like, there was a lot of support, and not just with Colin Kaepernick, with the entire team. I mean, you saw 20 guys kneeling, you know, at one point. And this was at a time where there were a lot of other owners that were discouraging their players from kneeling. Even the Cowboys owner, Jerry Jones, went as far as to say, my guys will not do this. Like, he demanded that they don't do it. And Jed York did the opposite. Hey, you guys have freedom of speech. You guys do, if that's what you guys want to do, I support it. And I'm also going to support it financially as well. I'm supporting it in an interview. Like, so it's like, what more do 49er fans want? Because they didn't keep a guy like that. That was the new regime. John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan have full control of this roster. And that was a guy that they didn't see themselves keeping. And I don't think at any point they were going to keep him. And they didn't have anything to do with that. Now, there was, John Lynch did make comments and said something along the lines of it being divisive. Divisive.
Yeah, no, you got it.
Yeah. And then he, you know, he tried to backtrack on those words. If anybody wants to say anything, like, talk about that. But Jed York and the 49ers on how they supported Colin Kaepernick, I thought that they did. I thought they supported him as much as one could be supported, like, throughout that time. Cause that was a really big thing. And they and I felt like they backed him. Now, I did hear or actually see, and I don't know if I saw a 49ers like blog report it or someone else or whatever, but I saw something about, and you can touch on this if you know more about it, Eric Reed says something about Jed York begged him not to knee, not to kneel.
I have not. I mean, I can jump on Eric. I don't know where he said that. I was just looking at Eric Reed's Twitter, and I checked like his replies and stuff like that. I don't know where he said that, but because all I saw was that he was quote tweeting all the NFL teams that posted the black square and calling them basically like, you know, Black Ball Tuesday instead of Blackout Tuesday, you know, and so I didn't see that, dude. I have not seen. I mean, I'm literally on the computer right now searching Reed York. I don't know. Well, okay. So this is an article about how Eric Reed and Torrey Smith are sparring back and forth. You know, I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to read it, but I mean, I honestly, I don't want to sit here and speak on it. I mean, hopefully you guys don't mind the fact that I'm Googling this right now. I just would want to.
I'm reading Torrey Smith's, and I was there and watched the way he handled Cap's protest. He was willing to support in any way possible and was trying to figure out and understand how to help. I never heard him say, don't kneel one time. He focused, and then I can't see the rest of what he put. But
is that on Twitter?
Yeah, this is on Twitter. Somebody screenshot it. And then Eric Reed quote tweeted and said, you speak based on your experience, and I understand that. However, I can tell you that you never heard him say, don't kneel, because you never knelt. He begged me not to kneel.
Well, I mean, it's tough to comment on that, you know. But I don't know, man. There's no way I can just accuse either of them of being inaccurate. You know what I mean? But to me, it's just their separate experiences. It sounds like. I mean,
right? He got one guy saying, like, "Hey, I never heard him say, you know, any of these." But then again, he's like, "Well, you weren't one that was kneeling. I was, and he told us not to," which seems contradictory. I mean, I believe Eric Reed. I feel like he's open. He is upset about some things. He is upset, but, you know, I think he's upset with the way that he was handled with the 49ers. I think that whole situation, I think the way that he was, you know, for a while he was blackballed and people wouldn't touch him.
Right.
I think he's upset with all of that. So.
Right. And it's if there was some observation to be made, if there's one person that would be much angrier with the 49ers, it would be Eric Reed. The two people are obviously coming at this from completely different perspectives, whereas Torrey Smith's tenure with the 49ers was fairly normal. Obviously, he, you know, he ended up being released, but he had, you know, had some moments with the team, and but at the same time, you know, Eric Reed's tenure with the 49ers is going to be completely different. The one thing I will say is, from an outward perspective, both Torrey Smith and Eric Reed seem like they're very in touch with what, you know, the social fabric of their people, America, whatever, however you want to talk about it. You know, they're both very active within that side of things. And if there's just an impression to be gleaned from either of them, Eric Reed has come off a lot more emotional and angry. Whereas, and maybe that's perfectly rightfully so. Whereas Torrey Smith seems a bit more, I don't know, calculated, if this makes any sense, you know. And I just remember, like, you know, Eric Reed, I don't think it was last year, I think it was 2 years ago, where he was, you know, he was trying to fight people on the field, and he was just obviously really upset at just generally things. So I don't know how that plays into it. But even in their responses to Jed York, you can see those two kind of thing. But yeah, Eric Reed, nobody wants your money, Jed. We want justice. We've always wanted justice. Y'all are truly diluted. And then Torrey said, I've had countless conversations with Jed about these issues when I was in SF. I'm grateful for his commitment to the Bay, and injustice is everywhere. Thanks, Jed York. So obviously they don't get any more different than that. So, you know,
I specifically spoke and had conversations with this guy, and basically saying, like, I never felt like any of what was going on was an issue. So,
right.
But yeah, again, there's two guys having two different experiences.
Right, right. And I don't know. Like I said, the big thing here is what goes on behind closed doors. Jed York has never given me the impression throughout all of this that he ever really had a problem with the kneeling. And like I said, he was very outward in his support when not many people were. So it's not like he was trendy and doing what everybody else was doing for the sake of getting along. So I just don't know. It's really tough to say. And obviously this is something that we're just kind of talking on based on outward appearances, because what happens in the conversations with Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reed and Eli Harold and anybody else who kneeled behind closed doors were probably very different than what's been advertised publicly. That doesn't mean that it was necessarily one way or the other, but obviously they're very different. So the thing with me is, going back to what I was saying, is when I tweeted about the 49ers and their commitment to this, is like I said, there's got to be things going on behind closed doors. But it just seems like the team has done quite a bit. And I don't know how this compares to other teams, but they seem like they've kind of been at the forefront of supporting players' free speech, supporting the action they choose to take in their football uniforms. And I've never gotten the sense that they, I don't know, are putting on a show, are putting on an act. It seems genuine. Jed York's words in that interview seemed genuine. And again, this is coming from a perspective that may not be valued by some of you, because, you know, a well-to-do white guy with a perfectly normal upbringing doesn't have a great perspective on these things. But, you know, all I can do is offer my perspective. That's all I can do. And it's up to you guys whether or not it has value to you. But it's just, it seems like, I obviously acknowledge that it was horrible what happened to Colin Kaepernick, it's not even a good thing, but this whole situation has just proven him more right, you know, and everything he did more worthwhile, because he was trying to bring what is happening today to the forefront long before it happened. And it has been happening, but I'm just talking about these really obvious incidences that we're dealing with today that have set the country on fire, figuratively. Obviously, you know, everybody's passionate about it now. Colin Kaepernick's been talking about this stuff since 2016, and he lost his career because he chose to talk about it and how he chose to express it. And the 49ers, like I said, outwardly, what I saw supported him every step of the way, and that's the same thing Jed York did. So it was weird to me to see the 49ers catch flack for that. When it comes to supporting these issues, they've seemed like they've been at kind of the forefront of things. Yes, they cut Cap, but what did you expect? Did you expect them to keep him forever? I don't think that Kyle Shanahan had much of an interest in Cap from a ability standpoint. None of the quarterbacks that he's brought in, yes, he had some success with RG3, but none of the quarterbacks that he's brought in since Colin Kaepernick, including Jimmy Garoppolo, have had any style that resembled Colin Kaepernick. You know,
remember, RG3 wasn't his guy. RG3 was their owner was Dan Snyder.
Right. Yeah. Dan Snyder.
That was his guy. And remember, they were pushing for Kirk Cousins, and RG3 knew that he wasn't their guy and that they were forced to play him. So again, that, you know, when you talk about a stylistic preference, it's really the opposite of what Colin Kaepernick kind of made his career on. Just from, you know, and everybody has their preferences. You know, if it's like, hey, if I could choose Michael Vick or Tom Brady, he would probably choose Tom Brady. You know, like, people just have their different preferences. And now that's kind of drastic. But
no, I get what you mean, though.
Ben Roethlisberger or Michael Vick in their prime, he probably still would pick Ben Roethlisberger. That's what I mean.
Right. And it's just, are there some ulterior motives within there? Could the 49ers have cut Kaepernick because of the kneeling? Of course, that's obviously an option, but it's just not been the impression that I've gotten. And to act on social media like the 49ers should cease to support the African-American community and people of color because of what happened to Colin Kaepernick just seems a little like, it's like holding a grudge that may or may not be even justified. You know, there's a case to be made either way. Did the 49ers greatly contribute to the blackballing of Colin Kaepernick the answer could definitely be yes. Did the 49ers support Colin Kaepernick in whatever way they could and just feel like they needed to move on for, you know, football reasons? The answer could definitely be yes. I'm just trying not to be emotional about it, and I'm just trying to be reasonable. And I don't know. It's, to me, like I said, I've tried to definitely be more of a listener than a talker throughout all this period, because I'm just very interested in other people's experiences and their perspectives on things, because I'm trying to learn, like hopefully a lot of people are. But that was just something that I was looking at going like, man, this, for a team that really seemed like they've genuinely tried to support what's going on, they're really kind of getting bashed right now. And from another perspective, like I know the 49ers, the guy who's in charge of 49ers social media account, the guy who tweets for the 49ers, he's an absolutely outstanding dude with like a huge heart. And obviously all of the decision on what to tweet doesn't rest on him, but it's a huge factor. And I know that this guy's not like, he doesn't have any ulterior motives for posting this shit. Like I saw somebody else from a verified Twitter account quote tweet the 49ers. He's like, what intern tweeted this? And I almost replied to it like, hey man, that's Johnny. He's the 49ers social media. He runs the 49ers social media account. He's a great dude. You should say hi, you know, cause it's just, people get so emotional over stuff and they say things that I'm just like, man, like I've met Johnny a lot. He's on Twitter. Plenty of people follow him because he runs the 49ers social media accounts. He's a good dude. He's trying to do well. Like, you know what I mean? It's just a very minor perspective amongst the whole thing, but it's just interesting times, man. It's, and like I said, it's obviously there's things that relate to the 49ers, but it's just, it's definitely not a time to, I don't know. It's just not a time for sports. Thankfully there's not a lot of sports stuff going on right now, but it's just, there's just so much to talk about and so much to do. And hopefully you guys are doing this stuff, whatever it is you're doing and the conversations you're having, just do it with an open mind and try and learn from other people's experiences. And, you know, you can obviously have your own judgments. And like I said, I'm judging everything I see from a very vague, not vague, but a very broad perspective of right versus wrong. You know, what do I know in my heart to be right and wrong? And then I realize that it's, you know, going back to kind of the current state, it's not up to me to judge the reactions of especially African Americans right now. Like there's so many people judging behaviors and judging actions and judging this, that, every little thing that happens. And to me, I've just felt like it's not up to me to judge that because I haven't gone through what they've gone through. And I can't, you know what I mean? Does that make sense, Croc?
Yeah. I think the biggest thing is really too, you know, I talked about having the conversation, but just acknowledging that there is a problem. And I think that's part of the issue too, that there are a lot of people that don't want to acknowledge that a certain group of people are being treated a little different, you know? And, you know, someone tweeted out, let me see if I can get the exact tweet. Let me pull it up. But somebody basically had tweeted out, you know, every black man basically like has like a story. Hold on, I don't want to butcher it. So let me go right to it because I quote tweeted it. Excuse me. Where's it at? Oh, right here. So the person tweeted, every single black man I know has a police story or four. And I don't have four police stories, but I don't have four. But, you know, I spoke about my experience with the police. And it, you know, at that time, it struck me as odd. And I knew not to react a certain way. But I never thought, you know, I never thought like, hey, the way that this guy is treating me is out of the ordinary. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's part of the issue. But basically what happened was in 2011, I was driving home from college with my buddy, my teammate, DJ. And, you know, we're riding and we're just getting into California, And at this time I get it. I had a car. It was, this is 2011. I had like a 2000 9 Impala. I had 22-inch rims. I had tinted windows. Like, all that. I get it. Well, I get it in the sense of how that – how my car could possibly be perceived by somebody looking to, you know, pick on someone. I don't know if that's the right word, but you kind of get where I'm going. To stereotype it, you know? Like, if you want to stereotype a car, it probably would have been that car. So we're driving, and as soon as we get through the little California state line, the cop pulls up behind us. And I tell my guy, just, you know, because it was my car, but my buddy was driving, my teammate. And I was like, you know, just keep driving, just do what you're doing. And we didn't do anything wrong. We weren't speeding. We weren't anything. But sure enough, bloop, they pull us over. And they pull us over. We kind of know it's BS, but I'm in my head, I'm just thinking it's probably because of the way my car looks. And so he comes to the car and he's like, hey, you know, license and registration or whatever. So he gives my buddy's license, registration, you know, that's mine, my insurance, all that. We give it to him. And then he says, why did you guys swerve? We're like, we didn't swerve. He said, you did swerve. Are you hiding a gun? We're like, what? Like, are we hiding a gun? Like, nah, dude. Look at my car is full. Like, we're college kids. We're coming from college. Like, it's full of our clothes coming back for Christmas break. And he was like, nah, the way that you swerved was very suspicious. He was like, it's very suspicious. And at this point, I know this can go one or two ways. I wasn't thinking somebody was going to like murder me or kill me or anything like that. But I know I can either just cooperate with this guy and maybe he'll let me go, or I can really get defensive because it's like, what the hell are you talking about? You know? But I said, you know, we don't have anything. And I knew what my rights were. I took criminal justice in college. And I said, but I said, you know what? I said, you can search my car. And, you know, this is me. I'm just trying to get out of here. Now, there might be other people that handle it a different type of way and get frustrated. And I think I very well could have gotten frustrated at the situation. But I just want to go. Like, we've been driving for a bunch of hours. We're trying to go home. So I said, you know what, man? You can search my car. He said, are you sure? I said, yes. I don't have anything to hide. Now, what I wasn't expecting was for him to handcuff, which I kind of get it, but for somebody that's saying, like, dude, you can search my car. I don't have anything to hide. I only have to let you search my car. I just want to get back on the road. You know, they put myself and my teammate in handcuffs and put us in back of the cop car while they searched through my entire car. And they went through everything. And even then, came back, are you sure you don't have a weapon? Like, come on, man. Like, let us go. Like, you know, it's late at night. It was probably like 2 a.m. Just let us go. We just want to go home. And he kept pushing and pushing and pushing to the point where he grabbed, like, so under my seat, every time I wash my car, I throw, like, the smell good things under my seat. You know, there's some people that hang it from their rearview mirror or their little, you know, the gear shifter. Me, I just throw them under my seat so you can smell it, but you can't see it. He said, hey, man, this is really suspicious that you have these smell good things under your seat. Like, what? Like, come on, man. Like, what are we talking about here? And I think those are situations that, like, you know, I never even told my mom about this story. Like, I didn't even think it was, like, something that I should talk to her about. But really, why were we being kind of treated like this? Why did we, you know, why did I have to have a gun? Like, why was I hiding a gun? Like, why, you know, why did I even have to let him search my car? And if I would have gotten, like, think about if my tone would have been a little bit different, what the ramifications from that could have been. Because I knew I was in the right. It's like, why is this dude messing with me? And, you know, I was talking with a co-worker one time, and he's like, man, crazy thing is, like, because of my privilege, this is his words. I don't want to turn anybody off. But he was like, I would have never even thought about that. He was like, I probably would have cussed the dude out. Like, what are we talking about? And I handled it in a way to where I just wanted to go home. But the fact that I even had to go through that, like, it was bullshit.
And yeah, no, it is. And what's so interesting too is keep going. I don't want to.
Yeah, but when people think that there's not an issue, when things like this are going on, And it's like, there's a lot of people like, you'll never have to deal with that. You wouldn't even have to, you wouldn't even think about having to go through that, you know? And I think that's where the issue is.
And that's where I'm coming from when I say, I don't look, do I think burning down somebody's small business is wrong? Of course I do. The, you know, but that's when I have to pause myself and say, look, I can't share the experiences that these people have gone through. I can't know the type of anger and frustration that could possibly be built up inside of me if I had to continually deal with these types of discrimination and depending on where you know, these African Americans live, it could be constant. It could be all the time. And you know, Crocker may only have one police story, but somebody else could have 10. You know what I mean? And I just, like I said, I can judge things with my lens of right and wrong, but in the end, I can't share these same experiences. I can't relate to what a lot of these Black men, women, children have gone through. So I can't judge them with that, you know, simple of a lens, you know. So I'm just trying to be understanding and, you know, of what people are going through. And obviously, you know, there's some other stuff going on to make things look worse than they are. And obviously there's all, I don't want to get into, it's not even conspiracies, you know, what's going on behind the scenes that I don't know, but it's just, look, man, there's a lot of people out there that have suffered a lot because of the color of their skin, which to me has always blown my mind. Like, wait. Like, I even since I was very young, I was like, wait. You mean people are treated differently based on the color of their skin? Like, you know, like, just because Black people at one point in their genes have spent more time in the sun, they're treated differently. Like, because that's really all it came down to. Like, that's where, you know, skin colors were created. It's kind of like where your race originated. And like, to me, it's just always blown my mind, but it's still going on. It's 2020 and we've got spacecraft that are rolling around on the Mars, but we still can't just get over the color of each other's skin. You know, and it's just, it blows my mind. And so when it comes to, hey man, don't you think this is jacked up? And don't you think these people are idiots for doing this and that? And I was like, man, I can't judge them. I haven't gone through anything that they've gone through. The craziest cops have ever been with me was because when I was young, I had a lower truck with airbags and all kinds of illegal shit on it. You know, that was my experience with the cops because I had a truck that was frowned upon, you know, I just can't relate. So, you know, there's just no point in me being super passionate about an opinion towards one thing when it's not up to me. And all I can do is try and be empathetic and support what people are going through, try to listen, try to learn, and try to, you know, develop some way that I can help. You know, and I had, when I asked that question on Twitter, one of the main replies was, one, listen, be empathetic. Speak out when you know something's wrong and try to be your own force for good. Like, you know, and I was in one of them that got a lot of likes and stuff. So I knew a lot of people saw it was, he just said like, raise your children right and raise them to be kind and to respect humans, all humans. And, you know, and as a teacher and as a coach, I feel like I've gotten an opportunity to be that way too. And that's just the way it is, man. Hopefully I make sense and I don't seem ignorant in one way or the other, but you know, I'm not perfect.
So, I think you're doing a great job. I appreciate you.
Yeah, man. Well, I mean, it's, and I appreciate you too, man. I'm glad that I get to jump on here with a Black man that's gone through a completely different life than me. And obviously you and I got along great, you know, before any of this, but it's just been cool to hear your perspective because it's valuable to me, man. And like, the knowledge is power. And the more I know before I leave this planet, the better off I'll be. So, you know, obviously things, if you were planning on a lighthearted 49ers conversation today, obviously you didn't get that, but hopefully you have, you know, it's just been worth your time. Cause I know it's been worth mine 100%. I enjoy talking about this stuff. Hopefully it was worth yours, Crox. And I mean, I don't know, man, what else, you got anything else you want to touch on before we roll out of here?
Ah, man, you know, I love everybody and you know, stay safe. I mean, we, both you and I, my wife is white. You know, your girlfriend, I don't know if you mind.
No, no, I don't care. Go for it. Yeah, keep talking.
But, you know, she's a, you know, like an Asian or, you know, one of those. So, like, we don't see, like, it for us, it's not like a color thing, you know. I think we see people for who they are. You know, I see my wife for the beautiful woman that she is, and you see your girlfriend for the beautiful woman that she is. And, you know, hopefully more people just start to see everyone in the world for that. And we're right. all going to have our differences, but, you know, I when I talk about I love everybody, I truly love everyone. And, you know, I just hope that hopefully this conversation that you and I are having sparks maybe another conversation with someone that listened to the pod. And tomorrow they say, hey, you know, I liked how you guys said this. Or maybe they bring up something that we didn't talk about. And maybe they just have questions, you know. Or, hey, if you guys want to, you know, send me a direct message, you know, I would love to, you know, to talk and just have that discussion if there's things that you don't feel comfortable maybe tweeting out and whatnot. So, you know, let's just have that discussion.
Right. Yeah, and I appreciate that. And same goes for me. Not that, like I said, not that my opinion and my experiences are nearly as valuable right now, but if there's anything you want to say to us on social media after this, whether it's positive, negative, it doesn't matter to me. Just hit us up. You know, you can get me at @Rob_Louder, LOWDER, and then Crocker's @Eric_Crocker. And, you know, we're always, whether it's a 49ers centered podcast or the conversation we just have, I always look forward to hearing from people who listen to the pod. It's just a great, you know, feeling to know that people are listening and they're enjoying our conversation. And that still holds true today, even when we had to have a conversation that's a bit more serious and a lot less about the 49ers than usual. But it's reality. And unfortunately, football takes a backseat to the stuff that's going on right now, as it should. And it would still be the same way if we were in the middle of the season. So just
it's again. Even taking, you know, even Crocker Report has taken the backseat. You know, we're not putting out any articles right now. We've kind of seized operations. So, you know, that's we just feel like it's not the right time. Right now, we should spend more time having the conversation and talking about things, especially right now where they're at the heights. And, you know, also have the conversation when things aren't, you know, as escalated. But it's just definitely not the time for us to put out any football content on Crocker Report. So, yeah.
And the one video that I'm sure some of you guys have seen, you might have seen it too, Crocker, that I feel like everybody needs to watch right now. And it's not necessarily to put like rose-colored glasses on in a situation like this that needs to be handled with seriousness and care. But there's that video of those two little kids, one's white and one's black, and they get it there. They're like on the sidewalk and they see each other from afar. And they just start running at each other like full speed. And when they get each other, they just share this huge hug because they're just so happy to see each other. And they just go walking off together to play with toys and, you know, do the things. And that just kind of, you know, and it shows you a very small way and that a child can actually lead the way for everybody. And the fact that a lot of the stuff you see going on right now is taught. It's not within us. At birth, it's stuff that's taught to us by all the wrongs in the world. So, you know, if you haven't seen that video, I'm not sure exactly what you'd have to Google to find it, but see if you can find that video of the white. They're like no more than 2 years old, a little white kid and a little black kid that run up to each other and just hug each other and then go off and play, because that's what children do. They don't see the world how we see it. So, but that's it for us, guys. I appreciate you guys. As always, like I said, whether you agree with anything we said or not, I still appreciate you guys for being here, especially 57 minutes into a pretty serious conversation that, you know, might not have brightened up your day at all, but that's just kind of how things is. But this is, you know, for another week, that's all we got for you, and we'll catch you next week. Striking Gold, signing off.